party. We'll find out more on that in just a few minutes' time. But let's talk about the Emergency Task Force Implementation Group. They have been meeting today again to try and improve ED overcrowding. It comes as the minister said he's going to impose heavy fines on hospitals that fail to meet targets for cutting waiting lists. The latest weapon in the arsenal is 300 extra hospital beds that are to be opened by the end of the year to ease overcrowding in EDs. Leo Varadkar saying he wasn't satisfied with the progress despite the extra 74 million in funding that had been provided. Here to look at the state of our hospitals, we've got two practitioners, Fergal Hickey, consultant in emergency medicine at Sligo Regional Hospital and communications officer with the Irish Association of Emergency Medicine, and Michael O'Keefe, consultant ophthalmologist at Temple Street Children's Hospital. You're very welcome this afternoon, gentlemen. Fergal, to you first of all, 300 beds being opened, that seems like the logical thing to do. Will it make much of a difference?
It'll make some difference, but I think, Jonathan, we need to understand that before austerity kicked in, it was generally accepted that we had too few acute hospital beds in this country. And during the period of austerity, we've lost somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 hospital beds. And those figures, you can argue about them, but it's in that order. And therefore, the return of 300 beds to service will be a help. But it certainly doesn't undo many of the savage cuts that took place in the last few years. And the people that are suffering are those waiting on trolleys for hospital admission. This is not,
for example, when you're working in an emergency department in somewhere like Sligo, is it frustrating to know that there are empty beds upstairs that are simply not being used because the funding isn't there for them?
It's deeply frustrating to know that to know what the solution is and that there has been little or no progress to achieve that solution. I think there's a more general problem, is that there was a culture within the HSC senior management a few years ago to say that we'd enough beds, even when the facts contradicted that. So it's been a relatively recent Damascus conversion for them to accept that we have a shortage of acute beds.
Why did they say there was enough beds when it's patently obvious that there wasn't?
Well, it was a view taken by Professor Drum, who was then the CEO of the HSC. He was very wedded to that particular view, but it was contradicted by the evidence. And that was before we had recession, when we had these savage cuts. And the reason that those cuts took place is that the view was taken that the only way of reducing the health service budget was to reduce the number of staff, and the only way to reduce the number of staff was to close beds and close wards. And that has been shown to be seriously misguided. We now can't recruit into those posts. And we are in a situation where we're short of staff, we're short of beds, and the people that suffer are those waiting on trolleys. And at the same time, you made reference in your introductory remarks to the fact that hospitals are going to be fined for failing to meet scheduled care targets. So we have this crazy situation where we don't have enough capacity in the system, and I think that's now finally accepted. And at the same time, the government is pushing for increasing numbers of scheduled care procedures to be done at the same time that we can't deal with the emergency workload, and that's just going to end in disaster.
Michael O'Keefe, the reason the fines are threatened is that hospital managers might in some way then be prompted into action, but is there any point in threatening fines when you're asking those managers to achieve the impossible?
Oh, I'd say not at all. I'd say the problem is that the hospitals would claim that their budgets are already under strain, and taking more money out of it will only make it worse. And as been said, the other big problem, of course, is the lack of staff, lack of nurses, lack of doctors. And therefore, I think it's the wrong way to go about it. It's just making a bad situation worse.
You've been in the system 29 years. Health cuts are nothing new. You've been through this particular cycle more than once before. How does this compare to the crises of the past when Charlie Haughey decided to close hospital beds?
Oh, I think it's much worse because you've had, as I said, you have a major A&E problem, which we didn't have before now. And as has been said, 8,000 beds were taken out of the system before the recession came. 8,000, Jonathan, at a time when an elderly population, an immigrant population, huge demand for services. And this has been the problem. They fail to recognize that it's a bed issue. They've tried all sorts of things to camouflage the A&E problem. bed blockers, early discharges, every single thing has been tried, but they've failed to recognize that it's the bed problem. When I was working down in Cork many years ago as a junior doctor, people who came in with an abdominal problem never went to the A&E. They went to the surgical department, likewise a medical department, because there were beds there to take them. And this has gone on and on for years, and they've just ignored the problem, and they've gone about it with the wrong solution.
Now, twice as many patients are having their operations and their scans and their hospital care cancelled over the first 6 months under this government. If we open 300 more beds today to relieve the pressure on the ED department, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference on those cancellations, is it? Because all you're doing is relieving the pressure on the ED department. You're not creating an environment whereby these patients would be seen in a timely fashion.
Oh, I think you need to open a few thousand beds, Jonathan. That's where we need to go. But the problem now is we don't have staffing for them because the nurses have left. They weren't taking jobs. Doctors have left. They're not taking jobs. So we have a manpower crisis. Of course, and I've spoken about many times, hospitals are inefficient, ineffective, and there need to be a lot of other measures taken, basic measures in hospitals to improve them in terms of the productivity and in terms of the way they work. And in terms of the management structure. But now cutting the budget is a complete wrong way to go about it.
I know doctors don't like criticising fellow clinicians, but Fergal, if I can ask you, what do you make of Leo Varadkar's stewardship of health? He went in there without the crusading attitude that James Riley had. He was more of a measured approach. Is he succeeding or not?
I think he's probably doing his best in impossible circumstances. I mean, he was left the ultimate poison chalice, taken over from James Riley. I mean, James Riley tended to pontificate about the problems and often, seemed to feel that he knew what the solutions were. I mean, my experience of Leo Varadkar is at least he's prepared to listen and he's a bit more realistic in what he promises.
Can he do the job?
Well, having said that, the difficulty is that the problem is getting worse. So we have a situation where we have an increasingly elderly population. More of them are coming to emergency departments. A greater percentage of those require hospital admission. And most of those admissions are people with complex medical problems, not something that can be turned around in 1 or 2 days. So, you know, when people talk about the tsunami of elderly medical patients, that might be slightly overstating, but there is no doubt that we have increasing demands on a system that is ill-equipped to deal with its current workload or even its workload for a few years ago. So the problem is only going to get worse. And it does require significant investment. And investment should not be seen as waste of money. Investment should be seen as just that. And it does concern me when I hear Brendan Howland making reference to the fact that when the HSE look for a certain sum of money, the automatic response is that they're not going to get that anyway. We do need to recognize that our healthcare system, although it is treating more and more patients, is increasingly unsafe and unstable and is likely to collapse over this coming winter. So okay. However bad things are now, they're likely to get worse.
And Michael, your prognosis for Leo Varadkar's tenure in health?
Well, I'd be more sympathetic to him, Jonathan, because I think he's been much more handled the situation. Obviously, he's got better political skills. I think one of the biggest problems he faced when he came in it is that the manpower had already deteriorated. Nurses, doctors weren't there. So he, in fairness, I think he had a bigger problem when he came in than his predecessor. His predecessor left an enormous problem. And the other big problem issue, which I think Varadkar has tried to address, is the goodwill. Goodwill has gone out of the system. And unless you have goodwill back in this healthcare system, nothing will happen. People now clock in, clock out. They finish at 8, they finish at 5. They've lost the vocation for it. And I think Varadkar has been trying to do that. And he's been, I think, successful to some extent. But he, as I said, he's facing an uphill battle and it's been made worse by his predecessor.
Okay, consultants Michael O'Keefe and Fergal Hickey, thank you very much for joining us. The point, of course, is if they're opening 300 extra beds, they can't hire nurses for the posts that are already there. How are they going to hire doctors and nurses to fill those extra vacancies? It seems like Leo Varadkar, every time he tries to put a fire out, another one starts burning in the other corner of the room. Another area of the health service that has